Chris Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of Naylor's Natter. This week I'm joined by Louise Lewis. Louise is a biologist and a research lead working in Yorkshire. In this interview, I ask her about how this role has developed, what her current responsibilities are, and of course, how she both critically consumes and disseminates research. I know many listeners are either research leads or looking to develop these within their schools, so Louise's insights are especially pertinent and useful here. So without further ado, over to the interview with Louise Lewis. Okay, welcome Louise, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hiya. So I'm going to start off with what I'm still calling the X Factor question, which is basically if you can tell listeners a little bit more about you, your journey to this point and your current role.
Okay, so I'm a research lead at a high school. It's an all-girls school in Yorkshire, originally not from there obviously. I've been teaching for around 10 years now, and prior to teaching I used to work in research, so I've kind of got a bit of an intrinsic thrive for research.
Oh, brilliant. Well, tell us a little bit more about that. So what was your role within research? What did you do there?
So I'm a biologist by trade, and I worked for the Medical Research Council, and I was looking at the effect of cancer chemotherapeutic drugs on immune cells and why people become immune suppressed, or why certain cells become suppressed when they have chemotherapy, and I looked at some biochemical pathways involved in that. So yeah, that was quite interesting before I became a teacher, but now I'm really engaged in educational research and really just want to make sure that that's used in practice as much as possible.
Perfect. And that is the reason that we're speaking to you this week, because obviously the big focus of this podcast is to try and make, you know, teachers, or try and encourage teachers, should I say, to become more research and evidence informed. So what we want to do is really speak to teachers in classrooms who are using this research, and obviously you're ideal for this. So the big focus of the podcast to discuss with listeners the one piece of research that's most influenced you. So if you could just tell us, what is that piece of research, and maybe a little bit of background in terms of why did you read that particular piece?
Okay, so in terms of research, it was less a research article and it was more evidence of effective activity in other schools. So there were a few people from the school that I currently work at who visited Michaela School in London and were just absolutely blown away by the work that they did. Came back completely full of it, and were recommending Battle Hymn of the Tiger Teachers to everyone. So I was straight on board with that, and I was reading Joe Kirby's section on knowledge organisers and thought, okay, this sounds interesting. Reading stuff on Twitter, reading blogs, okay, everyone's singing their praises, but I'm concerned about how they work in biology, and initially I was quite concerned about using them, if I can say that, because it seems to me that it was promoting a lot of recall. Now, of course, recall of information is really important. It's important to biology, but biology isn't just about recalling facts. There's a lot of application of knowledge, and did it really serve the purpose that I wanted it to serve? So for me, reading Battle Hymn of the Tiger Teachers, whilst not necessarily a piece of research, it was definitely evidence-informed, that was really seminal for me.
Absolutely, and it really is. I mean, another guest that we've had on the podcast this week, Pritesh Raichura, who is currently head of science down in Michaela, so he was talking quite a lot about what kind of things he does in his classroom, and not to give too much away, but he did speak about some of the stuff that you're talking about there. So in terms of going down there, having a look around, which he advertised, by the way, on the podcast and said that anyone's welcome to do, so, you know, I would definitely encourage that, and I'm sure you would as well.
Absolutely, yes.
What's been the impact in terms of bringing it back to school? What did you do with that information?
Okay, so I did quite a lot of research into knowledge organisers, what they were, what their purpose was, and how a student should use them, and how we should encourage their use in a classroom. And so At our school, we try to use a disciplined inquiry model. So it's almost like a piece of action research in your classroom, but you take a very controlled approach to it, so you can identify whether or not a particular strategy is effective for you in your context with your classes. So I thought for me, this is probably going to be the best approach, really, because I was a bit dubious, in all honesty, because I've seen many initiatives come and go, many wonder activities that were going to solve all your problems, and was this really going to be the thing that would help us in biology? So I took a disciplined inquiry model, we call it teacher-led inquiry at our school, and I used a year 10 class, and I decided, just so I've got a bigger cohort to look at, so I have a couple of year 10 classes that I can use. So I looked at their data from a previous topic where we'd not used knowledge organisers, looked at the progress they made and some of their kind of confidence indicators just through a bit of self-reporting, really. And then we then did another topic where I gave them a knowledge organiser at the start of the topic. I did lots of modelling around how I would expect them to be used, how I'd expect them to then do lots of self-quizzing as part of their homework, and I embedded it as lesson openers or starters, you know, whatever you want to call it, and embedded that as a bit of a quiz at the start of the lesson, which wasn't particularly a new thing to have that at the start of the lesson. We always do retrieval at the start of the lesson, but very tailored to the section that we were working on with the knowledge organiser. So I did that for a topic and compared results topic to topic. Now, there's lots of people that would dispute that that was not necessarily as controlled as it could be. I should have controlled for like groups. But for me, in that context, that was the best situation, the best possible thing that I could do at that point in time. So yeah, that's how I did it. And lots of students reported just how in control they felt, which I think is pretty phenomenal to hear a student say that they felt in control of the work they were doing, the revision that they were doing, and just to take ownership over that learning. Of course, our lessons remained largely the same, but they were reporting to me how much more confident they felt in their retrieval of knowledge and how it was embedded into their memory. So it was really effective for us.
Yeah, what a fascinating approach to that. So I was just writing a few things down as we're going through, because, you know, a lot of schools have taken knowledge organisers and then almost parachuted them in, used them straight off the shelf, and then, you know, kind of measured the impact probably in exam results at the end of the year, whereas mm-hmm. you've taken a very, as I would expect from somebody who's kind of steeped in research, taken a very research-based approach to actually mm-hmm. implementation of that and seeing that. So that's really, really interesting that you used a disciplined inquiry model and then compared like-for-like topics. And then did you share that information then across the department, and did other teachers decide to take that up off the back of that on the basis of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, part of my reasoning behind doing a disciplined inquiry model was that there were quite a few people who were kind of going for that approach with knowledge organisers. Okay, we've heard of knowledge organisers. Somebody somewhere who's doing really well says it's really good, so we're going to use them, but without any real thought of how they were going to be used or the impact it would have for us. We're quite lucky. Our students generally are quite self-motivated, so it was something that could kind of fall into the background amongst all of the other things that they would use for revision. And I didn't want it to be another add-on for us, another piece of paper that we had to print at the start of every topic. If we were going to do it, then it needed to be effective. So that's why I took that approach initially. And like I said, I was quite dubious about whether or not they were, you know, any better than a revision guide, you know. Once I'd completed my disciplined inquiry, then the results were shared with my department. We talked about it at length. We're quite a chatty department, so we have many discussions and debates about appropriate educational strategies, so we're quite lucky in that respect. And so now the approach that we take is that every student gets a knowledge organiser at the start of each topic for that particular topic, and we make sure that they're tabbed in each of their books as well, just so it's just an easy point of reference. It's just one less thing for them to think about. They know exactly where the knowledge organiser is, how they can locate it, and then we use that as part of their homework or independent learning.
Fantastic, fantastic. I'm just literally writing all of this kind of stuff down because, like I said, a lot of schools that I've worked with or I've looked at have taken it, but they haven't taken that systematic approach to it that you mm-hmm. clearly have. And just in terms of your wider role as a research lead, is this the kind of thing that you'd be engaged in sort of across departments? Do you have a role within your school and other schools to kind of, you know, disseminate best practice and kind of, if you like, be a critical consumer evidence, look at things like you said before that have come in and said, mm-hmm. not quite sure about that, because is that the kind of role that you've got from in terms of a research lead?
Yeah, so at my school, there's me and two others. We're research leads for our school, and a predominant part of our role is we run whole school CPD. So, as you said, we are critical consumers of evidence, and we spend a lot of time reading and looking at best practice for our school to inform things that go on within our school. But we are working with other schools currently, and that's something that we are looking towards in the future as well. We also work with a local research school, and we act as a bit of a hub for them and lead one of their courses. So yeah, we've kind of got a bit of a finger in every pie, really.
Brilliant. Can I go off script a little bit just to talk about the EF Science Guidance Report? Have you had much kind of input in terms of use of that or delivery of that or anything like that?
That's something that we are working on currently.
Okay.
And that's definitely in the plan for our departmental CPD next year. This year we haven't utilised it to its fullest, actually.
No, I think that, you know, obviously we've had quite a lot of involvement in terms of Lauren, who's our research lead in the science department, been on the panel for designing that, and then we've done some bits in terms of rolling that out. But a lot of what you're talking about and that approach to, you know, bringing things into departments is kind of through that and the implementation guidance. That's really interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the we've led quite heavily on the implementation guidance report within our school, and looking at how we format CPD, and we're particularly interested in how departments format their CPD now. Of course, departmental CPD is the best CPD, so we're looking at how we can have a whole school approach but ensuring that it is tailored to each department.
That's interesting. So in terms of, you know, subject specific against general pedagogical content, what's your sort of rough balance there in terms of...
Do you mean my opinion or what we do at our school?
Well, either or. I mean, in terms of, I mentioned to you before, we did a podcast this afternoon with Daniel Mears from Ofsted. So we were talking mm-hmm. around sort of content knowledge, subject specific knowledge, pedagogical content knowledge, that sort of thing. But it's difficult then to translate that into actual CPD plans, particularly on a departmental level, because a subject like you're teaching biology, but science across the board, there's an awful lot there. So how mm-hmm. do you go about dividing that up? Where do you select your expertise from? That sort of thing. And it can be your opinion or what you do.
Okay, so if I take it from the stance of whole school CPD, we've spent quite a lot of time looking at generic approaches in terms of getting our staff upskilled in their own knowledge of evidence and their own consumption of evidence, which we've taken very much a holistic approach to that. We've been particularly interested in memory and metacognition, which of course are the buzzwords at this moment in time, but actually weren't relevant to our school. So we did whole school CPD on those issues. But then we, even with concepts like that, where it's not necessarily subject specific in terms of subject knowledge, but certainly in subject practice, we turned a lot of that over to departments once we knew staff were upskilled in the basics of memory and metacognition. We then started to implement, well, what does that look like for your subject, and get them to build a repertoire of planning, monitoring, evaluating. How does the best student look in your subject? What do they look like when they're planning? What does monitoring look like for geography, for example? How do you evaluate in maths? And we turn that over to departmental discussions. So they've then got a framework of how that should be best done for their subject. We were particularly keen, though, when we were looking at that. We have a lot of focus on workload, as is the big issue, and we don't want anything that we're doing through CPD to add to workload. It should always reduce workload in well, my personal opinion and professional opinion. So we didn't want it to be an add-on. We don't want you to go away and change your schemes in order to have a planning, monitoring and evaluating section, for example, in each lesson. But your staff should know what it looks like for you. So that was how we took a whole school and then turned it into departmental for topics like metacognition and memory. Next year, however, in our CPD plan, we are looking to take a step back from whole school CPD and move towards everything being departmental based.
That's very, very interesting. And we had a very similar conversation today around that, in terms of we've done quite a lot of work on memory, and then we've done quite a lot of sort of front loading which kind of research papers you might want to look at, what the evidence says around that. But you're absolutely right. How does it look for your department, for your subject, and for the pupils in your class? And then actually coming, you know, but with one eye on, and you're absolutely right, with not just going away and rewriting your schemes of work to include references to memory or references to metacognition or that sort of thing. It's really important. That's fascinating.
And there's no point in doing that, because, you know, the majority of our teachers in our school and many of my colleagues, we've been teaching for a fair amount of time, and we've seen initiatives come and go, and we've seen schemes of work be written and rewritten, and that will be reinvented every single time. And none of the work that we're doing around becoming evidence-based should be arduous. It should just improve your quality first teaching, and it should make life easier both for your staff and for your students. And, you know, it's the professional standpoint I stick by.
And I suppose, again, back to your background in terms of the scientific research work that you did before, some criticism that's kind of levelled at some of the new thinking in terms of evidence-based practice is that, oh, well, this will come and go. So we're seeing quite a backlash towards something like cognitive load theory, for example, is seeing a lot of people coming back against that. But I suppose becoming evidence-informed means that you're able to move as the evidence base changes. And things like the toolkit are fluid. You know, they're not fixed.
And I think it's very easy for someone who is dubious about research, which actually I think we should all be dubious about research. We shouldn't just be eating up everything that's served to us. You know, we should absolutely be critically evaluating everything that we look at. And we should always have a bit of a sceptical view of whether or not this is just someone who needs to prove their funding, and that's why they've published that paper, for example. However, what I would say, and I think there is, and this is more a personal opinion than a professional one, I think there's a body of people who have, probably controversial, an arrogance, who are prepared to say that theories that exist in cognitive science are not worth the paper they're written on, and are quite easy to rubbish them. However, when you're looking at decades or a century's worth of research, is your opinion worth that much compared to that huge body of research? In my opinion, probably not. I'd probably go with where the numbers lie, but who am I to judge?
Well, exactly. But I think that exactly you are to judge in terms of both your background and this important role that seems to be developing within schools, which is the research lead. And it's the person that is kind of filtering out that, you know, the things that come into schools. Because we're all, I mean, we're bombarded with the next big thing, even now. Even being a research school, I mean, the irony is not lost on some people that promote things to us. You know, it's giving us all these things that are going to solve our problems, all these silver bullets that will be everything that you need. And actually having those critical consumers of evidence that I talked about before are absolutely pivotal to this. And you're right about, you know, scientists, you know, I'm a biologist as well, we're naturally sceptical about these kind of things. And that's helpful in this case, I think.
Absolutely. And I think it's not unreasonable to suggest that some of the evidence is likely flawed. However, you know, regardless of my background, just being a reasonable person, I would much sooner go on my best bets that lots of people have agreed are the best bets at that particular point in time. And there's lots of evidence to suggest that's my best bet compared to someone else's opinion because it looks good. I know where the balance lies for me.
Absolutely. If I could applaud, I would. But I'm currently writing all this down, so I probably can't.
I'll pat myself on the back.
Absolutely. Okay, Louise, if I'm just move on to talk about, now, you did a recent article for the TESS, which was very, very well received. So I just wondered whether you could tell listeners a little bit more about what you spoke about in there, and maybe signpost them to where they could find that article.
Okay, so it's back to the start of our conversation, really, and it's looking at my journey of using knowledge organisers and how they've really helped our students reduce their exam stress. It's helped condense their revision and given them a lot more confidence in their revision and a lot more ownership over their revision. So I taught people through the disciplined inquiry model that I've hinted at. I look at some of my more dubious thoughts around them and then looked at the impact of them in my classroom and where we're going in the future with them. So that was in the TES, which was out on the 19th of April, so it's in the magazine. I think it is on the website, though. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I've got a subscription, obviously, but so I can mm-hmm. I can see everything. But yeah, pretty sure it is. That's brilliant. So in terms of just wrapping it up and the last question, really, obviously, there's a lot of stuff there. Where can listeners find a little bit more about what you personally are doing or about what the school is doing and maybe a little bit more about that link with that you being the research lead as well, if you can tell us where you can find out a bit more.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter, so people are welcome to follow me on there. I've normally got a little controversial opinion or two that I've put across. And then the work as a research lead, as I say, I'm at Beverley High School in Yorkshire, and there's information about the work that we do on our school's website.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Louise, can I just thank you for giving up your time on a Thursday evening? Very much appreciated. We'll put links to everything that you've talked about in terms of your article and all the other things that you've talked about and referenced in there, and maybe some things to Michaela and to the book as well. So thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to my dad on the podcast called Naylor's Natter. Follow him on Twitter at PNA1977.
Louise was a fantastic guest, and so much so that I continued asking her questions for a good 10 minutes after the interview. And as I said at the top of the podcast, her insight and experience of the role is very useful for anyone who's aspiring to or is currently in that role. Coming up in the shameless plug section, I'll be speaking on behalf of the Blackpool Research School and the Teacher Development Trust on Tuesday at Inside Govs Conference, talking about our journey with evidence and research-based practice with effective professional development in Blackpool. On the 15th of June, I was speaking at Research Ed Rugby on our use of evidence and research across Blackpool. And further from that, we're going to be speaking at the Wellington Festival of Education. That's myself and Simon Cox. Next week, we're incredibly excited. As I mentioned last week, we will have Deputy Director of Ofsted, Mr. Daniel Mears, and I will be joined by my co-host, Mr. Simon Cox, where we will be asking Daniel all about evidence and research for teachers. So that one is not to be missed. Thank you for listening to Naylor's Natter, and have a great weekend. See you next time.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.